Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Friday here on Blog Talk Radio and later on YesNetwork.com. It's the Off the Wall Podcast. Boy, have we grown here on the podcast, joining the old Blog Talk Radio. We had guests all week long, except for Monday. Jimmy Leirich joined me on Tuesday. Billy Sample joined Joe Auriemma and myself on Wednesday. Seth Everett was on the show yesterday with me. And today, joining me on the program is none other than the one they call Flash, John Flaherty. Thank you for joining us, John, and welcome back from a very rainy Ohio.
Well, it's my pleasure to be here, and I came back to a very rainy state of New York, so I'm used to
it. You brought it with you. It's awful. It was summer here a couple days ago, and then all of a sudden Mother Nature decided to send it back to winter. So, you know, I guess it's only a couple more weeks of this crap, and then we can move on and start getting into some baseball weather. Before we talk about the Yankees and their recent road trip, which you saw basically all five starters on, which I want to pick your brain on in just a second, I want to start by obviously going out west last night in this Dodgers and Padres brawl that took place because of the pitch that Zach Greinke threw in the bottom of the sixth inning to Carlos Quentin. Now, it's a 3-2 pitch in a 2-1 game to the leadoff batter. Now, I want to read you what Don Mattingly said after the game, and then I want to get your thoughts on it, Flash. Nothing happens if he goes to first base like in baseball you know you do, because you know he's not throwing at you 3-2 in a 2-1 game. That's zero understanding of the game of baseball. He shouldn't play a game until Greinke could pitch. What are your thoughts on what Mattingly had to say there?
Well, I love the thoughts from Donnie. Obviously, we all love Don Mattingly, and he's right. I mean, in that situation, you have to have a little more common sense, a 3-2 count, a one-run game. But then you dig a little bit deeper, and there is some history there with Greinke hitting Quentin a couple of times in the past. But when you watch Quentin hit, he's a diver. He likes to hang out over the plate. And I think his mentality, his attitude should be, you know what, that's going to be part of my game. I'm going to get hit by some pitches. But I agree with Donnie that he didn't have a feel for the situation. And it was interesting. Last night I was making my way back to my house after the flight back from Cleveland, and I was following on Twitter, and I saw that this whole thing was going down. And my original thought, Chris, was this is good for the Dodgers because it's going to bring them together. You know, it's one of those moments that could be really a team bonding experience. And then you hear about the injury to Greinke, and obviously you change your mind really quickly on it.
Yeah, he's out 6 to 8 weeks. They said indefinitely, but it was reported today that it would be 6 to 8 weeks with that broken collarbone. And that's just an awful break, if you'll pardon an awful pun there, for the Dodgers with Greinke going down with this injury. And Quentin said after the game, he charged the mound. He said he obviously brought up the history that you alluded to, but he also said that Greinke said something to him. Now, before I did the sports sprint, before we taped it for the Mike Francesa show, our excellent tape operator, Joe Frombach, showed me the reverse angle and Greinke. After he hits him, and it looked like, Flash, it was a two-seamer that bore in on Quentin, and Mattingly also said, you know, here I am looking at the scoreboard when this guy comes to the plate that he set a Padres record for getting hit by pitches. You know, maybe the present day Don Baylor, but as you said, he dives out there, and then all of a sudden you see Greinke. He throws the pitch, it hits Quentin. He shakes his head like, you know, what did I just do? It's 3-2. I let one get away from me, and I put the leadoff runner on. There is that history there, though. That's the third time that Greinke's hit Quentin. And he says, and you could read his lips, clear as day, damn it. That's what he says, but he's staring directly at Quentin. And I guess Quentin thought he was directing that, you know, he was mad at himself saying, damn it. And you think Quentin, I guess for a second, with all the history, just it snapped and he runs out there. But it's just an awful break for the Dodgers.
Yeah, you know what, Chris, it reminds me of a situation I played with Gerald Williams in Tampa, and he had gotten drilled by Pedro Martinez on numerous occasions, and we're on a team flight heading back to Tampa one day, and we're kind of talking about it, and he said, I've had enough. You know, if it happens again, I'm going to go get him, and that's how players think. You know, if they get hit multiple times, they lose track of the actual situation in the game and what's going on. And you know, there was no intent there by Greinke. But in Quentin's mind, when he went into that series and he said, I'm facing this guy, if he comes anywhere close to me, I'm going to go get him. And it's a huge loss for the Dodgers. So we'll see if they can stay afloat early on.
And more to what you said about the Dodgers coming together as well, this continued after the game. Matt Kemp confronted Quentin in a hallway at Petco Park, and from what the reports are saying, they had to be separated by police and teammates. And these two teams, they don't get a lot of time to let this settle down. They play each other again at Dodger Stadium, and on, of all days, it's Jackie Robinson Day on Monday, and that's when they kick off another series at Chavez Ravine.
You know, and I was lucky enough to be a part of the Padres for a year and a half and kind of experience that Dodger-Padre rivalry. And, it, you know, it's not like the Red Sox-Yankees, but it's heated. I mean, the teams get into it. But it, like I said, last night my original thought was, wow, this is good for the Dodgers. It's going to bring them together. For some reason, it does that in baseball when you have some sort of a brawl and you see your teammates in a different light, how they kind of have each other's back. And all of a sudden you're like, wow, we're all in this together. I thought that's what was going to happen here, but obviously with the injury, it doesn't, you know, you think more about the injury than the team bonding part of it.
Well, let's now switch our focus here to the Yankees slash, and you just got back from the road trip through Detroit, through Cleveland. You only played two of the four, obviously, in awful Ohio, where the weather was just brutal, and the Tigers played in their coldest game since the mid-90s. It was 35 degrees at first pitch for their game yesterday with the Blue Jays, where Josh Johnson absolutely got obliterated in just an inning and a third of work. But that's another story for another time. The Yankees rotation, you know, this is the same, basically the rotation that was in play last year, the same five now that Phil Hughes came up and he got the start on Saturday. Same five guys that won 95 games. Now, that's a tall order, you know, to ask a baseball team, especially a pitching staff, to duplicate what they did last year. You're asking Sabathia to come back from his elbow surgery. You're asking Kuroda to come back and do something that he did last year when he's a year older. But let's start in backwards order. We'll go with Saturday first and Hughes. He didn't last long in the game, Flash, but were there certain positives that you could take out of his outing on Saturday?
Yeah, there were, Chris. You know, I think we have to think, first of all, that was the first major league competition Phil Hughes has faced since, you know, he didn't face any in spring training. So it was kind of he was supposed to have a start in the minor leagues, got the late call to have that start against the Tigers, and he got beat up a little bit, and that's fine. But, you know, the good news is he threw the ball over the plate. He was aggressive with all of his pitches. I don't think Phil Hughes, if healthy, is going to be a problem because he eliminated that cutter midway through the year last year, and it was just fastball, slider, curveball, changeup, and he was a better pitcher in the second half. He had more weapons. So I looked at that start and said, you know what, all right, he got beat up by a good lineup, but let's remember this is really he's getting his feet wet in, you know, in almost a spring training situation. So I am leaning towards giving him a mulligan in that start.
And, you know, the thing with him, it seems every year he has his issues, John, when he leaves his pitches up. You know, it doesn't matter how hard you throw. If you're leaving pitches up in the zone, that's why he pretty much led the league and given up home runs last year. He was up there amongst the major league leaders in that category. So do you think he has to live a little bit lower in the zone this year in order to be successful?
I think you have to break it down pitch by pitch, Chris. And, you know, okay, like I mentioned, eliminating the cutter, that was the pitch that the Yankee coaching staff got so frustrated with because that's where he made a lot of his mistakes. It would spin in the middle of the plate. Instead of being, you know, 92 miles an hour, it was about 89, 88. It was perfect hitting speed, and it would end up in the seats. I think Phil Hughes can pitch up in the strike zone with his fastball, and I think he needs to be down with his off-speed pitches, obviously the curveball and the changeup and the slider. So I think he's a guy that not, you know, you don't just tell him, hey, you have to keep the ball down, because a lot of hitters in the major leagues, you get a 92-mile-an-hour fastball down, it's easier to drop the bat head and drive that baseball. I think he can pitch up with 92 and 93 and kind of change some eye levels and then go down with the off-speed pitches. But, you know, the thing that I would look for Phil maybe to add another weapon is to get a little more movement with a BP fastball and a fastball count, where you don't try to overpower a hitter. You do an Andy Pettit and say, I'm gonna drop a little bit of movement and let the hitter get himself out. Phil hasn't gotten that to that point yet, but I think he can use that weapon when he gets a little older.
Yeah, and Andy's like a fine wine. I mean, it's really must-see TV when Pettit takes the mound. It just takes you back to, I don't want to say yesteryear, but I don't want to go that far. But it's just fun watching this guy, who's basically going to be 41 in June, do what he does on a consistent basis and starts the season 2-0 with an ERA, just over one. But we'll get to him in a second. First, I want to talk about Ivan Nova as well. And I you saw him on Friday night, mm-hmm. and I'm going backwards again, but, he came off the field and he didn't last into the fifth inning, or he did last, he just didn't complete the fifth inning. What did you see out of him? He said his problem was he wasn't throwing enough strikes. Obviously, that's one of your problems, but what else did you see doing the game that Nova has to improve on if he wants to stay in this rotation?
Well, mechanically, he's out of whack. I mean, he's missing with fastball command by, a full plate length, and, trying to throw a ball down and away, it ends up and in. Because of that, he throws a good breaking ball, then he hangs one. But, I really felt, I think it was Chris Stewart catching him that game. I felt bad because you could see that Chris trying to get something going to get him into a rhythm and kind of get going deep into the ball game, and it just never happened. But my biggest concern with Nova is, he, after the game, said that he thought he threw the ball well. And, as a teammate, when you hear a pitcher, and, still a relatively young pitcher, say things like that, it frustrates you because,
we all know what happened to Ian Kennedy as well.
Yeah, exactly. Good point. Yeah, you didn't throw the ball well. And, the one thing about Phil Hughes, I think, that everybody loves in that clubhouse, when he gets lit up, he says, I got lit up and yeah. I have to get better. That's what I want to hear from Nova, because you can see the Yankees losing a little bit of patience with Nova, and he's got to figure it out because there are some options, number one option being that kid Phelps in the bullpen.
Right, and Phelps would be, he would line up, or Warren would line up to take, a chance at that rotation spot as well. Warren has pitched well so far
yep.
this season. Let's move forward now to CC Sabathia. He takes the mound against Justin Verlander. Even though you have your ace going, you have to think, with the patchwork lineup the Yankees are dealing with everybody on the shelf with injuries, by the way, that patchwork lineup is playing above and beyond what they should be playing, what they should be doing right now. But you think you have an uphill battle against Verlander and the Tigers. And then CC Sabathia goes out there and guts it out and gets some support from the lineup and beats Verlander. I mean, to me, I think that vaulted them into Cleveland and really gave them a little pep in their step along the way. And it all starts, as it always does, Flash, with your ace.
No, you're 100% right. And, on paper, after what CC did in the home opener, velocity, obviously a huge issue in New York. He's throwing 89-90. It's crazy to say, and I almost felt guilty saying it on the air, Chris, but he threw 7 shutout innings in that game, and he was not great. He was not good.
Right. He gutted it out, absolutely.
Yeah, he wasn't striking people out. You could tell by his body language he was frustrated with his command, and, his breaking ball wasn't great. And all that being said, he shut down a very, very, very good lineup. I mean, I was really impressed with that Tiger team. So,
you could tell after he got Jackson on the final strikeout that he was just pumped up. I mean, he knew what he went through to get through that outing.
Yeah, Mike Mussina would always tell me that those are the outings that you're more proud of because you're not locked in. You don't have great stuff, and it isn't easy. So you have to think, you have to grind, you have to find a way, almost will your way to a win, and that's what he did. And, the good news with all of that being said is CC's a slow starter. Velocity always takes a little bit of time for him to get going. So to be able to beat that team and get a huge win, like you mentioned, for the Yankees to set them into Cleveland, I think that's really good signs for CC on having a good year. And I had a surgery similar to his, obviously not being a pitcher but a catcher. And I hate to say it's not that big of a deal, but you just clean it up a little bit. He said he's healthy. I expect him to have a big year.
You don't throw as much as a pitcher. I mean, you're tossing it back to the pitcher, obviously, during the entire game. But when you have to gear up and throw the ball down the second after you had that surgery, John, did you have any ill effects? I mean, did
no,
you feel anything?
You know what it felt like? It felt like there was freedom in there for a change, you know. And
okay.
I had a bone chip, I had bone spurs, and it was just constant irritation. You felt like you couldn't get full extension on your throws. And to tell you the truth, it was more annoying than anything else. It's not something that you can't play through. And we saw that with CeCe. You know, he
right.
had a big second half until the last start of the postseason. It kind of caught up with him. But I kind of, you know, listening to him during the spring, I could kind of relate that he said it feels great, it's free, everything's good. And, you know, that being said, it's going to take a little while for him to get the velocity, as it always has. So everybody
right.
points to the surgery and says, well, his velocity's down. I don't agree. I just think this guy has always been a slow starter, and what we've seen him as a Yankee, I trust that he's going to be right where he needs to be.
Yeah, and I did some digging. You know, his first starts, his opening day starts for the Yankees over his 10-year or 5 years, if you want to say it that way. He is 0-3 with an ERA near 7.5. But
yep.
then his second starts, I think he's 3-0 or 4-0, and his ERA goes down to just over 1. So, you know, like you said, he starts off slow. It takes him a while to get that velocity up. But once he gets that velocity up, I mean, he could be damn near unhittable for a stretch of 10 to 12 starts, which he's shown, you know, almost in every year of his career, except for last year when he had the elbow issues. And speaking of getting off to a slow start, you know, Hiroki Kuroda last year, it seemed like every time he went to the mound at the beginning of the season, and even CeCe Sabathia admitted after the year, you know, you could even point to Hiroki being the ace of our staff because, he saved our bacon a lot of times. But he started out slow. It seemed like I would do the BP show when Hiroki was starting. I would come back to my office, take my makeup off like a gentleman, and get in my car, go home, and I would put the game on as soon as I got back to my house, and the Yankees would be down 2-3 to nothing in the second inning. And this was like the first 2 or 3 starts from Kuroda. So he started slow last year, so it doesn't really shock me. I mean, he gutted out a win in his second start against the Indians. I mean, he gave up the 3-run lead in the first inning in his second start out there at Jacobs Field. I refuse to call it what it is now. It's the Jake by the Lake. It'll always be to me. Just like Candlestick Park should have never changed from Candlestick Park. And now it's Candlestick Park again. But anyway, I digress. I go off on these tangents, John. I apologize. But you know that from doing Flash Forward with me, which
yeah.
was basically the nucleus of the Off the Wall podcast. That's what basically started us off. So thank you for that. I appreciate
it.
But going back to Hiroki Kuroda, what did you see? I know it was you only saw the one start in Cleveland, but kind of break it down. Give us a little analysis of what you saw out of him that night in Cleveland.
Well, you know, he took that line drive off the fingertip, his first start against the Red Sox.
That didn't help, right.
That didn't help things. So when he showed up in Cleveland, right?
Or right.
Yeah, it was Cleveland. He, he readily admitted that he wasn't 100%, which kind of surprised me that a pitcher would admit that before his start. So obviously we paid a lot of attention, and he just did not look comfortable. He gave up that 3-run lead in the first, like you mentioned. But even his body language in between pitches, taking a lot of time, walking around the mound. And the one thing that I enjoyed about covering Kuroda last year was the guy worked fast to get on the mound. He threw strikes. He changed speeds. And the start in Cleveland, you could tell he wasn't 100% comfortable because that wasn't his rhythm. So, you know, that all being said, again, a guy who kind of didn't have good stuff and you know, gutted out a victory and, you know, did what you would expect a veteran to do against kind of a younger lineup. But all that being said, velocity was a tick below what we saw last year. So he didn't have that command with the split and the curveball. So he's only going to get better.
All right. We touched on Pettitte. I just want to throw this out at you. I had Jim Leyritz on the show on Tuesday, another catcher. It's like catcher week this week. But I had him on the show on Tuesday, and I brought something up to him. In 1995, the playoff game against the Mariners, game 2 at Yankee Stadium, that went 15 innings, Andy Pettitte started that game. Mariano Rivera finished it, throwing 3 1/3. Of course, Leiritz gets the walk off. The Yankees win, and they get swept in Seattle, and they get, you know, out of the playoffs in 95, but they win it in 96. But to see them still competing at the level they're competing at, both Pettit and Rivera, I'll combine the two. Doesn't it just make you want to shake your head and say, wow, these guys are just unbelievably gifted at what they do and just incredible at how, you know, the longevity that they've had?
Well, the first thought that comes to my mind in playing with both of them, is their work ethic and how they take care of themselves. And it's not just, hitting the weight room or getting your running in and all that. It's a 24-hour thing for both of them. They eat right, they get their sleep, they take care of themselves, and it's one of the reasons they're able to do this as long as they've done it. But, you know, I said to Andy on the field the other day after his start, he was kind of doing a little tossing with Mike Harkey, and I said, man, you're making all of us old guys look bad because it's not that easy. It's not that easy to leave the game, come back, and, you know, Chris, he looks like he's, you know, pitching at about 70%. He's out there just having a good time, throwing strikes.
Well, I joked on Monday, I from his couple of starts, I said, you know, this guy could pitch till he's 50. That's what
sure
it looks like.
Sure he can. And, you know, as long as his back and his legs and all that keep, you know, hold up. But he I think, has figured it out. And part of the conversation I had with him, I said, I wish you would have been able to throw all of your pitches for strikes the way you can do now. Because when he was younger, it was basically, you know, the cutter was his best pitch, and you would call it probably 75% of the time. And you would mix in the curveball and the changeup, but they were afterthoughts. You know, now when you watch him, you know, and if you're a catcher, Stewart or Cervelli, you can call any pitch at any time. And he's a pleasure to watch. He works fast. He stands on the mound waiting for the sign. You know, he commands respect. He dictates the action. I mean, everything out there is what you would love to see a young pitcher do. Throw strikes, mix all your pitches, and work fast.
Work fast is the operative phrase there, yes. Moving on, John, this next series, and I know it's still early. Don't get me wrong, but I think, you know, with the Yankees still set up with their first three in their rotation heading into this Orioles series, do you think that this weekend is a good litmus test for not only the players, but fans too, who are a little, you know, worried about this team at the outset with the lineup being the way it is, even though it's performing at a high level right now? Do you think, you know, Gonzalez, Sabathia, Hamill, Kuroda, Chen, and Pettit, this will be a good test for this team and the fans alike this weekend?
You know, I guess so. I always felt like the month of April was kind of like, a boxing match where you're kind of feeling everybody out, you know, who's got things working, who's going to be a contender, who's not, you know, and I still feel that way here in the middle of April that, you know, you could probably make a little too much of some series. And, you know, I think the Yankees, my opinion, Chris, when I was down in spring training, I said, you know what, let me get on that first road trip to Detroit and Cleveland and get a feel for this team, you know, get a feel for their personality and what they have going on. And I'll tell you what, I was very impressed on that trip. You know, offensively, the new guys that have come in look like they're really comfortable hitting in the middle of the lineup, and they all look like they're locked in. And then you get Robinson and Brett Gardner going again. And all of a sudden you're saying, you know what, I like this team. You know, they got a good bullpen. And so I think it's more the Yankees trying to get themselves figured out more than it is we gotta worry about Baltimore, and this is a big test for us. I think it's too early for that stuff.
But with the AL East the way it is, with it so competitive, and, you know, I've had people say that the division could be an 86-89 win divisional champion because it's so competitive. So, I mean, not maybe so important as to, like, a litmus test this early in the season, but just where they stand with a team that is basically supposed to compete for the division title.
Yeah, I mean, you look at every team in the East, and, you know, obviously Toronto's gotten off to a tough start. And I felt in spring training you could look at every team and say there are question marks all the way across in our division. And, you know, Baltimore coming in, are they going to win all those one-run games that they did last year? And you're already hearing, you know, you read things, oh, they've lost a couple of one-run games already. It's not going to be the same type of year. Everybody's feeling each other out. The Red Sox have gotten off to a better start than I think people expected. So all of a sudden the fans up there start believing a little bit more than they did in the spring. So it's just I always felt like at the beginning of the year it's more important to concentrate on your own team, your own clubhouse, your own rotation, your own lineup, and get things the way you want them to be, get everybody comfortable in their positions, and then you start, you know, when you get to the middle of the season, really start bearing down on the competition and see where everybody is.
What do you think is the drop-dead date where you have to look? Is it like where you look at your standings, where you look at your, is it Memorial Day? Is it sometime in June? Is it July? When do you really have to start looking at your team and where you are and start saying, hey, we got to get going?
You know what, the All-Star break's probably a little bit too late. It's probably somewhere around the beginning of June. Where
okay.
You say, you know, we're 2 months into it now. You know, where are we at and what do we need to do to fix it? If you're Brian Cashman, do I have to make a move? Is there somebody in the minor leagues who might help us? But, you know, I was lucky enough to play for Hall of Famer Sparky Anderson in Detroit, and I remember...
Saw that first home run of yours, too, at Tiger Stadium.
Good-looking kid back then, huh?
A very young Flash racing around the bases.
I remember our 95 season, we had a really good first half, and we're, you know, a couple of games out of first place, and mm-hmm. Sparky had a team meeting, you know, right before the day of the All-Star break, everybody was going to go away, and he said, you know... The real teams show up in the second half. You guys haven't done anything yet. And he said, you know, don't get excited with yourself because, you know, the second half is what separates the men from the boys. And we didn't have a good enough team, and we fell apart right after the All-Star break. So I'll always remember that. You know, the first half, you're mm-hmm. kind of jockeying for position. You don't want to lose the division, obviously, early on where you get off to a terrible start. But when you come back from that All-Star break, you know, you better have the club that you want that can make a push.
All right. What do Connie Mack, Tug McGraw, Mark McGwire, Sean Casey, you, Pete Flynn, Red Foley, Jeff Horgan, and Kevin Costner have in common?
The Irish Hall of Fame.
Yep, you got it. You were the first inductees into that Irish American Baseball Hall of Fame in 2008. And, you know, I am half Irish.
You are.
You know that, right? I'm Henry Hill.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm Italian and Irish. So, you know, if you want to put in a little word for me there, maybe. I know I can't qualify just yet. I haven't done too much. But hopefully in the years to come I could qualify for that Foley's Irish-American Hall of Fame.
I like the combination, the Irish-Italian. All of my kids will be the same or are the same combination. So, and they're pretty good.
Yep.
They come from pretty good stock, so it's all good.
Yeah, you know, you get the best of both worlds. You get the love of food and the, well, we won't go into the other one, but you know what I'm talking about.
Well, what about the temper on the Italian side?
Yeah. When the green and red blood mix, you don't want to be around. You really don't want to be around. John Flaherty, thank you for your time today here on the Off the Wall podcast. And I mean this sincerely when I say this. You know, when we started doing that thing, Flash Forward for YesNetwork.com, it really started the juices flowing in me to start doing something. So you were a little bit, you know, you didn't have to do it, and you continue to help us out here on the podcast. So I really appreciate it. So thanks for coming on today, and hopefully we can make this more than a one-time deal. Hopefully you could come on when we need you to discuss a little Yankees. And, you know, do you know when your next trip is, when your next set of games are?
I will be in the studio next week, so I will get a chance to hang out with you live and in person next week. So,
nice.
Anytime you need me for this, Chris, I'm always available for you.
Well, we appreciate it. Thank you, buddy. And I'm going to hold you to that date on the links with Mr. Lorenz.
Yeah.
So I can't wait for that as well.
Look forward to it.
So
that'll be
go out
day.
There and hack it up with you guys. All right,
buddy.
John. Have a great day, and we'll talk to you down the road. I appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Chris. Thanks.
All right. That's John Flaherty here on the Off the Wall podcast. The Yankees will be taking on the Orioles, as we said, this weekend. The first game tonight, Friday, on WWOR, that's Channel 9 in the New York area. Miguel Gonzalez goes up against C.C. Sabathia. In his first Major League season last year, Gonzalez defeated the Yankees twice and holds a 2.63 ERA over the Bombers in 13 2/3 innings. Sabathia faced the Orioles twice in the ALDS last season, winning both games, including a complete game in the deciding fifth game as well. So it's a rematch of the ALDS between the Yankees and the Orioles. It begins tonight on My9. It continues tomorrow afternoon on the YES Network as Jason Hammel faces Hiroki Kuroda. And then on Sunday, it wraps up on ESPN on Sunday Night Baseball, Wei-Yin Chen against Andy Pettitte. That's it for us. We'll see you Monday at 12:30 for another Off the Wall.